Hey, y'all. Welcome back to another episode of The Short-Term Show. I'm your host, Avery Carl. Before we get started today, please note we have a lot of jobs up on our careers page, specifically agents in the Orlando, Park City, Shenandoah, Outer Banks, and Smoky Mountains market. So if you think that you are an agent that might be a fit, go over to shorttermshop.com or email us at careers@theshorttermshop.com. Also, be sure to leave this podcast a 5-star review. The more reviews we have, the more content we can bring you to try to help you on your short-term rental journey. Now, we have a very cool guest today, very experienced short-term rental investor and arbitrager, which a lot of times people don't do both. They like pick one and that's it, and they don't cross over. Kind of like, I don't know a lot of people who own short-terms and long-terms. People kind of buy the thing that they buy and they stick with it. But I like diversification, and this guest does too. And we've got Michael Chang from STR Like the Best. I've known Michael longer than I'd like to admit at this point. since before COVID, we'll put it that way. And Michael, thanks for coming on the show today.
Hi, Avery. Thank you for having me back on.
Yeah. Great to see you. Love to have you back on. And just for the listeners who may not have heard that first one we did years back, just give us a little backstory and reintroduce yourself to our audience.
Sure. So my name is Michael Chang. I launched our short-term rental business with my wife back in 2016. Right now, we have 38 properties, 30 that we control through long-term leases. We're located in the city of Philadelphia, and we own 7 short-term rentals, 6 in the Smokies, and 1 in the Catskills, New York. And we have 1 more coming online shortly, so that makes 38. And like what Avery said, we use 2 different strategies. We do lease arbitrage, which generates cash flow, allowed my wife and I to both leave our full-time jobs and focus on growing our real estate portfolio by buying great short-term rentals with Avery and her team.
Thank you very much. And we do appreciate that. So I think my first question before we get into anything else is, so 38, that is a large amount of properties to manage, you know, whether you're owning them or arbitraging them. Once you get them set up, like the amount of work is kind of the same in the management. So I want to hear about how you're able to do that efficiently, because I hear so many people are like, why would you buy a short-term rental? You're creating a job for yourself. Well, no. I mean, what difference does it make? It's better than sitting in an office working for somebody else. So I want to hear about that first.
Yeah, I know. It definitely beats working for someone else. Like today, you and I, before we came on the show, my son got sick over the weekend, and my wife and I could just kind of stay home and take care of him. And, you know, every day, every time we do that, I am always, you know, very thankful for short-term rentals has been able to provide for me and my family. So last time I was on, I think we were like 25 total. So we've kind of been able to grow the portfolio over the last, you know, year and a half. And, you know, all of our properties are located at least 2 hours away from us. You know, we live in New York City, so Philadelphia is like 2 hours, Catskills is 2 hours, and Smokies is 12 hours away by car. So we don't go down there. And it really is building your team, right? It's the technology, building your team, building the process. And you really can do everything remotely. Now, the technology is so much better today, 2021. Today in 2025 versus even 2 years ago. And definitely when I first started in 2016, there's so much out there. You have to just use the right technology that's suitable for what you're trying to do, you know, and then build the team, the VA, the cleaners, so that you can run this as a business, right? You're not trying to do this to get another job, and you're not trying to run this as a business.
I think that's a really important distinction to make, the difference between a job and a business. Like running a business is not having a job. Running a business is, you know, you're in charge. I don't want to say you don't have a boss, because you have however many bosses at any given time as you have rental properties. So, you know, you do have people to answer to and make sure that you're providing a quality service to them. But there is a difference. You're not buying yourself a job. You're buying yourself a business. And that's different.
Very, very, very different. So this gentleman, Sebastian, someone that I've been helping mentoring, he first came to me. He had like 12 units, 12 properties, lease arbitrage, you know, some in New York, some in Florida, some in Columbia, the country. And when I first saw him, I was like, you look so tired. He's like, yeah, well, I get up every day at 3 in the morning to check messages because I don't have a VA. And I was like, okay, but the first thing we have to do is like picture technology. I got him on an AI bot, and now, like, you know, it answers all his messages, getting him a VA, improving his processes. And now he's like 10 pounds lighter. He's going to get engaged in like a month. And like his life is really different 6 months later. So it really is like, if you're like deep in the hole of social rentals and dealing with the day to day with your cleaners or your guests, whatever the case may be, like there really is a better way. And the solutions are out there. And they're not that expensive. They're like 20, 30 bucks a month. Just learn how to use technology. Don't be scared. And your life will be much, much better. And you'll really be a business owner versus, you know, glorified short-term rental hosts.
Are you afraid of saturation? Well, join Short-Term Shop Plus and let the saturated be afraid of you. Become the best in the business at stsplus.com.
Yeah, so what AI bot is that?
Oh, Avery, am I giving away the sauce here today? No. So I use Hostaway, which is a property management system. Yeah, really, we've been using it since 2019. 6 years now, we really like it. We transitioned from a few other ones. But the one that we use is called Telehost AI. And I've tried all the different, and anyone knows the kind of technique, and I've tried all the other different AI bots out there, and this one is the best. In my opinion, I recommend it to a lot of my peers in the industry, guys that have like 300-400 units from these arbitrage. So like really, really scaled operations. And not even down to like Sebastian uses it. He has like, you know, 16 units out. Some other students that have like 1 or 2 units. So it's super user friendly. The great thing about it actually like learns from all your prior messages. So you don't have to go and teach it. It actually just kind of reads everything that you've done before. And then learns your property. There's some tuning involved, but it's way easier than a lot of the other AI software out there, like Bestie or a Host Buddy, and some of the other ones. So we're huge fans. We have no other affiliation except that we're just really big fans of the founder. Her name's Annie and her product. So yeah, if you want an introduction, guys, just reach out to me. I'm happy to show you too. Yeah. Great product.
Is that the same Annie who has Hostco?
No, different
Annie.
Okay. She's in Canada. And the only reason I met her was I went to the Hostaway user conference in Miami 6 months ago, and they had like a little small booth because they're, you know, it's just husband and wife. And I met them. I was walking, you know, they were like right next to Marriott. So I was talking to Marriott people. I walked by, and then I was like, "Hey, what do you guys do?" And then she showed me. I was like, pretty skeptical. And then she's like, "Well, we have 20 short-term rentals. And like, we do it for our own properties for the past year." I was like, "Really?" Like, yeah. Like, what really sold me was nothing but just an AI show. There's no draft mode. What does that mean? Most AI bots out there, it's like it will pre-draft a message and you have to actually click it, or your VA has to click send. They're so confident in their product that it will automatically send unless you tell it not to. And I was like, wait a minute, right? Like, you trust, like, it's that good where you trust it to kind of just like live in the wild. It's like, yeah, like we've been using it for our own. And then like, I was still pretty skeptical. So I gave them like 2 to trial. And then in a week, they took everything. And then now I've like helped double their business basically. So, yeah, it's pretty solid.
Well, I'll have to check them out.
I think Luke will, you'll save Luke some time. He can go, he can go get some more miles in.
Yeah, he doesn't need to get any more miles in.
I love his content.
He ran on Thursday, like a random, you know, middle of the week last week. He goes in the mornings. He comes in, you know, like 7 o'clock. Oh, I did 13 today.
Already?
Yeah. Already, oh my 8 gosh. O'clock in the morning. He wakes up at 4 and gets out the door. But yeah, like, but if he doesn't run, then he is extremely annoying to me. He's got all this energy. Can you just chill? So we need him to run, but yes, we'll, I'll hook him up with it's called HelloHost.
HelloHost AI. I'm happy to introduce you to Annie.
Okay. So 38 that you're using VAs, you're using AI, you're using all these tools for efficiency. I want to talk a little bit about like, what are you seeing across 38 properties? And that's what, 3 markets, Philadelphia, the Smokies, and the Adirondack Catskills.
Catskills.
Okay. I don't know my mountain ranges very well. Okay. So we're just seeing, I would like to hear what your synopsis of the quote Airbnb bust has been. So for me, it's been like, we dropped about 10% from the peak, but we're still way above where we started 10 years ago. So it's been for us more of a blip than a bust, but I would love to hear, because you've got the unique perspective of having both metro market and vacation market. So let's hear about that.
Yeah. So let me, I'll divide it, right? Let me divide and conquer a little bit. So Philadelphia, you know, folks listening, obviously major urban center. We started in Philadelphia in 2019. So we've like almost like 6 years of history there. And I would say, you know, COVID hit March 2020 with this incredible boom, right? In 2020, 2021, it was just like, nothing was better. It was so good. And every single year it's come down a little bit, right? But, you know, off a very high level. So it's always been very, very good. And I would say, you know, 2024, when I say very good, I'm talking about like 30% plus cash flow margin. It means that like every dollar that comes in, 30 plus cents of that is profit. And this is after like all costs. So this isn't, I'm not talking about revenue. I won't share exact numbers, but they were like way above 30 and like, you know, it's slowly trend down, but it's still very profitable. And, you know, the 23 was great. 24 was great. 25 actually started really good. April was very good. And then we had Liberation Day and, you know, this isn't plenty of a show, you know, one way or the other. I'm talking about actual numbers. And we definitely saw, a blip. It was like a few weeks where we really paced a lot lower than we did last year. And that was like, I would say beginning of April to probably the end of April. And then it started coming back. And now May ended up being fine. We were below a little bit on price. We cut price in order to get the occupancy we didn't want to be empty. But June and July are now at pace a little over last year. So, at least for Philadelphia, at least in the urban markets, it was like definitely an air pocket in April that we experienced. And we probably lost a little bit of money there. Not lost money, but we gave up some price to get the occupancy. We wanted to, make sure we were occupied. And then we held out for June, July, and later on, and the markets recovered. We could see that shift. So that's been fine. So it's kind of very temporary. Smokies is a different animal. Smokies, luckily, you know, Avery, you and your team kind of helped us buy, you know, good properties, at good prices and good rates. So our basis is good. So price, you know, we didn't overpay and our interest rates are crazy. And it's, you know, it's been so good for so long. It's always been good, right? We got in kind of 2020, 20 was great, 21 was great, 22 was great, 23 was great, 24 was pretty good still. I would say this year, we're probably like 15% on a total revenue basis. So say we were like 10K for, you know, January for one property, for example, now we're like 8,500. So it's definitely come down and it's definitely impacted profitability in Smokies. July is the first month it actually is at the same level as 24. Mm-hmm. So that's definitely been concerning. And we've done a bunch of stuff to, you know, upgrade the properties and make it better. And we're seeing the results of that. But that I'm definitely, you know, concerned about. And then lastly, and I'll be quick on this, the Catskills. We just bought it in June. We closed June of 2024, went live Labor Day. We projected 200 for that property. And actual plus book revenue, we're at 178, and we still have all of August that's not booked, and we have two more weekends that aren't booked. So I think we'll get pretty close to 200. And then our first 6 weeks, we like lowered the prices, on purpose to get bookings and reviews. So we're a little underpriced in the beginning too. So we feel pretty good about 200. So we hit the mark on that, and that will be like a 22% cash on cash return. So that's, you know, 72K, of interstate profit for the one property. So that one there's definitely still opportunity, but it's not like the Smokies were before. You just kind of buy anything before. Now it's definitely a different game.
Yeah. Yeah. You have to pay attention. You have to host well. You have to finance right. You have to do all of the things right For sure. What size are all, you don't have to go through every single of your 38 properties, but generally, like, what does your portfolio look like in terms of property sizes and bedroom counts?
Yeah, so the stuff in Philadelphia, they're just apartments. So they can be from studios, three bedrooms. It depends on the rent, what makes it work. That's really for arbitrage if you're interested in that. It's just really what's, and I guess it's kind of the same as properties, but, buying, it's just the rent that you're paying. And then once we own the Smokies, they range from, three bedroom pool cabin, that we bought from you guys, or you guys helped us buy, back in 23. and then, up to, you know, a six bedroom that's right next to Dollywood. That one does well. So that's our kind of 3 to 6. I would say the larger ones do better, and then the one with the pool does better. It's like the four bedroom. That's like the four bedroom is the one that's struggling. The three or four bedrooms are the one that are struggling without the pool. There's so many of them right now being built. So, that's definitely something that we're keeping an eye on. And then, you know, we've opted now for like a much better product. So, or a much higher quality product. That's where we want to really invest now. So that house that we just bought, we paid list price. It was $995,000. We put $200,000 into it, in renovations and furniture and make it designed really nice. But it'll generate the returns. So it's just a lot, kind of a lot more. You have to kind of like not more expensive as a six bedroom.
Yeah.
4,000 square foot vacation.
Yeah, that's big. That's big. So when you go to do these kinds of upgrades, so what are you upgrading for $200,000? What are you putting in?
Yeah, it's an expensive market. So you're probably gonna laugh at me. You're gonna be like, man, like you really paid a lot. But we put in a hot tub, sauna, but we actually really, you know, we did the concrete slab, so we didn't cheap out or anything. Like really, just since we own it, we want to make sure that, you know, we paid a little bit more now, so that we have a better product. Right. So we did that, redid the outdoor, we redid the floors, on certain levels, it's carpets, we ripped out, put, you know, like nice LVP, we put in an AC, repainted. So that was really kind of the stuff that changed. And then we spent a lot on design, the furniture. Mm-hmm. We spent like over $100K on furniture, and we hired a designer. So we literally invested a lot in design and the guest experience, just because we were targeting kind of well-to-do families that live in New York, New Jersey, Philadelphia, you know, Boston-ish, right? Mm-hmm. So we wanted to make it a place where like three families could come together, or like, you know, two, you know, one family, like one multi-generational family could all come in and enjoy themselves. And then in the mountain town they're at, which I won't say which one, there's just a lot of like really cool shops and restaurants. So it's really more of an elevated experience. So we wanted to really craft something that would like, speak to the guest avatar that we're going for. So we spent a lot on design. We spent like $15K just on the virtual design. Mm-hmm. Why?
Yeah. Well, it seems like it's paying off though.
First year, you know? Yeah, it is. You know, I don't count my, you know, I've been in this game for too long. I think it's good. It's a good product in the mid market. So it definitely validated our thesis. Mm-hmm. Did we kind of overpay a little bit? I think we did, because in the beginning we didn't, our labor wasn't right. And I think we probably like overspent on a few things. I think we probably could have cut it by a little bit, but it's going to work. It's, you know, 22% cash on cash in the first year, which you're happy with. And then, we'll be able to take a big, tax deduction with bonus and Section 779. So, it's for our purpose, it worked really well, and it's validated like this thesis that we have for the Catskills more broadly. So now we can go and, you know, kind of grow our portfolio. That's one area that we can grow our portfolio.
If you're new to vacation rentals or want to up your game, we are here to help. The experts at Short Term Shop Plus can help guide you in your mission to create memories for your guests at wonderful overnight rentals. We have one-on-one coaching available with our experts, and the price is right. Short Term Shop Plus is inexpensive, and we would love to earn your business. Please join us at stsplus.com. stsplus.com. That's stsplus.com. Are you looking for a change? Well, the short-term shop is hiring realtors. If you live in or want to move to one of the best vacation markets in the United States, we want you to join the team. We are a small family-owned business, but we are one of the biggest real estate teams in the world. We are looking for new team members. Please contact us at theshorttermshop.com/careers. Theshorttermshop.com/careers.
Yeah, love that. So let's talk about how, so you found a deal, you found a market. It is rough out there to find deals right now. So on this next one, since you feel like you overpaid a little on the last one, what is your strategy for finding a good deal?
Call you, Avery. Right?
Of course. Other than that, what's your second choice?
other than texting Avery, the strategy is, I think for us, we want to. So when I say overpaid, I don't think we overpaid for the property. We bought it list, but there was another offer. I think we got a different price, or we got it at a fair price. What I meant overpaying was, like, I think we spent too much on the renovation and the labor. We just weren't as, like, good as we could have been. Like, we paid like $12,000 for electrical, and this time I could probably do it for like $6,000. Like, I didn't know what I was doing. We made some mistakes. But, you know, it's validated that, like, bigger, nicer, 2 hours from New York, like, works. And then, you know, we know like what we want to do with the outdoor. And I don't mean like just throwing a pickleball, but being like very intentional on like what I now know our ideal customer wants for like them and their kids. So it's not like just, the typical like putting a pool, putting a pickleball, and it all kind of works. But, you know, there's specific things that we understand in the market that, you know, we'll make sure that we can put in for the next property. For us, having a good property, like something that actually just looks elevated, I think for us, it's like having the high ceilings, a great view, like the large windows that like look out to, you actually have some distance and look out. Like, people really like that, the fireplace, that really speaks to the audience that we're trying to attract, like the real wood, just stuff that photographs well and it speaks to, you know, the booker that we want to pay $1,000 a night to stay at our property.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that. I really like that you said that, because there's been, I've seen a lot lately that's kind of been bugging me, of people that are like, we see it a lot in like the Central and South Florida, see it in Western North Carolina sometimes, even in Scottsdale sometimes too, where people will buy these like 50s brick ranch homes for like $500,000 and then spend like $250,000 adding all these things to them. I call it amenity soup, like, you know, plopping all this crap down.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the day, it's like, okay, now you've spent $750,000. Well, obviously not that much total cash, but like for that extra $250,000 cash that you put down to amenitize, you still have a brick ranch home. So when you go to sell, you've got $750,000 into it, just to make numbers nice and easy. And for that much, you know, a brick ranch home, a potential buyer, they have better options in terms of architecture and nicer actual houses. And I don't want to use the term lipstick on a pig, but that's what I'm going to do. Like, at the end of the day, you have a brick ranch home that has a lot of lipstick on it. And when you go to sell, your buyer pool can just go buy a nicer, more updated new property with better architecture than buy a brick ranch home that has like cool wallpaper and like a pickleball court.
Yeah. And you hit the nail on the head. I think people kind of forget the, you know, and it kind of going a little technical here, but like personal property versus real property. Like, you know, and people kind of forget like the three stools of real estate investing that I think are the most critical, like cash flow, appreciation, suffering appreciation, and then tax benefits. So when you buy the, you know, and I see this a lot, the $500,000, you know, ranch with a flat backyard that abuts to your neighbors too. And then you throw, you know, pickleballs are really loud, right? And you don't tee off your neighbors. This amenities too, and just like everything in there. I think one, it's like, it's not that intentional because you just have everything. It's, you know, you try to like attract everyone and you actually don't speak to the person that you want, right? Like some people, they don't really want, like a pickleball court wouldn't actually make sense in my market, actually. Like the other things that actually would get me a higher AD, would get me a higher rate, for example. I think understanding that is really critical. And then, yeah, like when you go resell it, like no one's going to pay for that. No one's going to be able to get financing for $200K of amenities that you put in. You're going to have to sell to a short-term rental buyer. And they're going to have to kind of pay cash or get more to the financing. So you really lock yourself in now. You're really giving yourself fewer outs. So you better make sure it works. And what I see a lot of people screw up on or like not do a good job on is their repair and maintenance. Like it's a lot of like these things that they're outside, they get used heavily. Your pickleball is one thing where you just repaint it, but these things, you got to have the right cleaning team, the right maintenance team, make sure all this stuff works. Because what happens is like you do this and then you get all the guest complaints about like, I'm missing this, this is broken. You don't have the right people to fix that, then you know, you have a problem. So I think people kind of forget it looks really cool and then the marketing is really cool, but they're, you know, you can't think today, you got to think like 5 years down the line, you're going to be operating this because you do something like this, like you're probably going to own this for a while.
Yeah.
But I think these are the nuances that like you and I that's been doing it for a long time, like for if you're new out there and you're listening to this, like these are things that you want to understand, like you're not, this isn't a flip. It's not a flip.
Right. Yeah. And I don't want to give the impression that you're not going to make money if you add a bunch of these amenities, because you will. It will absolutely impact your income, but you do have to think about on the back end, who's going to buy this and why, and what you're spending money on. Is it only an income producing amenity, or is it an income and value add to the actual value of the property amenity? And it's important to make sure that you're balancing those correctly so you don't end up having to sell for less than what you spent on the property later.
I mean, from what I understand, it's, you know, the only thing is the pool, an in-ground pool would be the appraiser would take that into account. I've heard mixed things about a pickleball court, and all the other stuff doesn't really count from my understanding.
Yeah. So, you know, like the kitchen upgrades, bathroom upgrades, flooring, paint, things like that, that counts. A pool even can be a little tricky because you can spend $150,000 on putting in a really nice pool and only get, you know, $50,000 back on the value of the property. So it's tough. but you know, you just have to pay attention. And some, you know, it's in some markets it's worth more than others. So like in Florida, pools don't really add. I mean, pools add a lot more value than, because everybody has one. So if you've got a property that doesn't have a pool, then you're like kind of lagging behind. But you know, in Tennessee, not necessarily the Smokies, but like just Tennessee real estate, a pool only adds like 40,000 because it's not something that like is considered standard. So it's really easy to spend a lot more on a pool than what the value it actually adds. But it's, I mean, we could get way in the weeds on this if we wanted to, but yeah, just be careful about that too, because you don't want to have to either be willing to undo all of the changes that you made to make it very short-term rentable, like the murals and things like that, or just plan to hold it for an extremely long time.
Yeah, well, that's the point too, right? It's like, when you do it like that, you can always sell it to the short-term rental.
Yeah, yeah. And so you just kind of have to think of like what your buyer pool is going to be. And also, you know, I personally, as a short-term rental buyer, would rather buy a nicer property, like let's say, you know, we're talking about mountain markets, like with the high ceilings and the A-frames, and doing less of the amenity stuff, still doing some, but then buying something kind of weird and like prettying it up as best you can. Anyway, that we got to make sure you're adding value at all times.
Yeah. And I think just like you know, buying, like the nicer you buy, like it's going to be just, they're going to appreciate faster, better, faster. And then the buyer pool is going to be like bigger versus, you know, there's a lot of $500,000 row houses in San Antonio. they're literally everywhere. There's no differentiation.
Yeah. You want like something a little bit unique if you can get it. And if you can't, then, you know, amenitize, but, you know, try to get that property that's inherently unique first, in my opinion. Yeah. So Michael, is there anything else that you've learned or experienced over the last few years since the last time we had you that before we get to the end of our time together, that you feel like our listeners would benefit from hearing about that we haven't talked about?
Yeah. Just, I think two things, right? One is the professionalization of the space. I think just, you know, more, it's not the oversaturation part that I, you know, that I think people should, you know, think about. It's just everyone's getting better. The technology's getting better, right? So if you want to do this, I think just level up your skill and your education on how to run a good short-term rental profitably for the long-term, right? If you can do that, there's a lot of information out there. Like Luke does a great job. Like that is now much more of a necessity than, you know, than what it was 2 years ago. So I think that's a really important point. And I think two is like, I think for me, it's nicer, right? If you want to buy something, just like opt for the nice thing you can buy that, you know, works in your budget that will cash flow for you. But, I think we're in a situation now where nicer, people that can pay more to go on vacation or still want to go on vacation, that's the kind of guest that I, those are the kind of guests that we target. So we're looking for buying. So, you know, looking to buy nicer stuff. So, you know, you as a operator being more upgrading your own skill set, and then, you know, whatever property that you acquire, like it being as nice as you can have it. I think that's, two kind of key ingredients to success, in the near and medium term for social rentals.
All right. Good advice. Now I'm going to ask you for a little bit more advice because you've already been asked these questions before on this show, but we're going to do it again. What advice would you give 20-year-old Michael and Liz? Liz is Michael's wife, guys. She wasn't but
unfortunately, next time we'll have her on, I'll just take care of our sixth son right now. 20-year-old Michael, I would tell him to so that Michael would have been, you know, 2000 Michael. So I would tell him to not go out as much and should, you know, buy that first property because all the properties that where I was looking at are now like 10x the value. So instead of going out, should sit, you know, put money down for a 3% down payment for an FHA loan. I have a lot more money right now. So that's what I tell them.
Good advice. And what advice do you have for a new investor who's looking to get started today in 2025?
And the best advice I can give, and I get asked this question a lot, the best advice I can give is like, do the work. There's really good tax advantages with buying short-term rentals right now. You know, I think bonus depreciation will come back. And there's still plenty of money to be made. Like, we just bought one last year. It's doing really well. But I think it's really elevating your own personal skill set. So, you know, finding the right broker, understanding the data, right? Understanding what makes a good market, what makes a good property, and then how to operate it. Like, if you can do all that, if you can do that, and it's not that hard, but it just takes a little bit of time and dedication, you can still be very successful at short-term rentals. It's only been, you know, people kind of think it's oversaturated, it's over, but Airbnb investing didn't really take off until COVID, right? Until like 2020. So we're really kind of, I think we're still really in the third inning of this. It's harder than it was 5 years ago, granted, but there's still a ton of opportunity. And I'm excited. We continue to look to grow and to invest in the space.
Same here. And last question, what's your favorite book since last time that's impacted your mindset?
Oh, man. It's I don't know if I mentioned it last time, but the book that I like to read every single year, it's called The Richest Man in Babylon. It's my favorite book. And I actually read it to my daughter now, but it's just, you know, some parables from back in the day on how to be responsible with money, how to think about money. And I wish I read that book when I wish 20-year-old Michael read that book, because, you know, when 38-year-old Michael read that book 6 years ago and still continues to reread it, like it's a good reminder on good money habits, how to look in the future, how to protect your downside. So I think it's one of the best books. It's $4 on Amazon. Like, everyone should read that book. It's a great book.
It is a great one. And last how can our listeners follow you if they want to learn more about you or follow your journey?
Sure. I post a lot on Instagram at Michael Chang B&B, MichaelChangB&B. So my wife and I post a lot about how we invest, how we build the future for our two young kids. And so if that's someone like you looking to, you have a family, looking to start a family and want to invest in the future for your spouse and your children, I hope you'll take a look at, we have some good strategies that we can use that I think will be helpful for someone like that.
All right. So he's at Michael Chang B&B. I'm at The Avery Carl and at The Short Term Shop. And thank you guys so much for listening. Michael, thank you so much for coming on.
Avery, it's always a pleasure. Thank you for having me on.